Missing 411 is a concept put together by an ex-police officer named David Politis. There are a number of specifications that victims fit in order to fall into the category of a missing 411 case. Most of us, however, have just come to call the most bizarre of missing persons cases missing 411. Today we discuss an absolutely bizarre case that, despite the fact that I'm extremely interested in missing 411 and the phenomenon occurring in our national parks, I've never heard of. The bizarre and horrifying case of Cullen Finnerty. A lot of questions arise while researching this case, and very few of the answers put forth by investigators make sense at all. Who were the stalkers on the banks of the river? How did Cullen die? And what horrors did he experience his 2 days lost in the Michigan woods? Welcome to the 21CD podcast. I'm your ghost, John. Let's get into it. Welcome back to the 21CD podcast, everybody. As always, I'm your ghost, John. Joining me today, Billy Bones. For the moment, he's wide awake. We'll see how long that lasts. How are you guys enjoying Power Week, huh? 3 episodes, 1 week. I know 2 of them are a little bit shorter. This one will probably be a little bit shorter, too. But how are you guys liking it? Should we start doing more episodes in a week? For a while, I've been trying to figure out if I want to do 2 episodes in a week, and honestly, it's a lot of work, but it's kind of fun too. It might be worth it. As always, I'm drinking coffee, so if you hear me slurping away, that's what it is. Hey guys, if you're listening to me on a podcast platform, please consider following me on YouTube and Instagram. On YouTube, we've got all the episodes in 4K video. I don't just upload the audio to YouTube and put a little thumbnail over it. I actually have 4K video content that accompanies every single podcast episode. And a lot of times photos and videos and whatnot that pertain to the case that we're talking about are also in the YouTube video. So that might be fun for you guys to listen to. That being said, I am a truck driver in my other life, so if you are unable to watch YouTube videos, I totally understand, and that's why we are on every single podcast platform. One thing you can do to really help me out, though, is follow the Instagram. The Instagram is where most of the updates are going to happen and are happening. We're going to start doing a lot of stuff that you guys are going to want to be able to follow the Instagram for, to learn more about, such as giveaways and Q&As and stuff like that. So if you're interested in being a bigger part of the podcast and helping us out a little bit, please consider following that. You can find every account that 21CD has at 21CD Podcast. That's the hashtag everywhere you go, at 21CD Podcast, 21CD Podcast. If you've got stories, let me get them. Let me get them, okay? You can leave a comment. You can send me a message on any of my socials. Or you can send me an email. If you guys want to shoot me an email, you can at 21cdstudios@gmail.com, and we will either try to get you on the podcast for an interview, or I can at least tell your story if it's something that, you know, fits the vibe. So it's 21cdstudios@gmail.com. All right, guys, let's get right into this. Today we're going to be talking about Cullen Finnerty. This was a case that, even though I'm super into missing 411, I had never heard of. And I even now, I don't exactly know how I found it, but it was an accident that I found this case. And the first thing I noticed is that it took place in Michigan. And as a lot of you guys know, I am moving back up to Wisconsin, where I am from. And so right now I'm sort of digging deep into that area again. When I lived there, I was so surrounded by everything that was going on in the area that I almost didn't pay attention to it because I was just part of this whole thing. And when I moved away and came to Nashville, I started realizing that, like, wow, there's a lot of stuff that goes on up north. And one of the things that seems to happen a lot up north, especially in Michigan, are these missing persons cases that are just bizarre. Like, sometimes entire airplanes go missing over the Great Lakes near Michigan and Wisconsin. And it's like, what? How does that even happen? It's a lake. It's not like it's flying through the Bermuda Triangle, but it is flying through a triangle of sorts, because I come to find out they have what's called the Michigan Triangle, where there's all sorts of unexplained phenomenon going on. And I'm going to be diving into that stuff in the near future. But outside of the Michigan Triangle, just crazy stuff still happens in the wildernesses of Michigan and Wisconsin and Canada, the UP, Minnesota. That whole area is just a hot spot for weird missing persons cases, hauntings, and other phenomenon. And so I started looking at this case, realizing that it might connect to another case that I'm going to be discussing at a different episode. And the more I was researching Cullen Finnerty, the more I was confused, which a lot of times when I start researching something, this happens for anything. Like, you can get to the point where the shiny reasons that the government or the reporters or the autopsy reports or whatever it is, the shiny reasons that they give for whatever happened, you can, like, after reading 15, 20 articles about them, eventually they kind of, like, soften you up a little bit. And you're like, okay, maybe. Like, maybe there isn't anything really weird about this case. Maybe this is something that actually was just pretty natural and it's just unfortunate. That's not the case with Cullen Finnerty. Like, when I was researching Cullen Finnerty, every single thing I read or listened to or watched confused me even more. Like, I was just like, what happened to him? Like, what is going on? How is there not a manhunt for whoever is in the woods who killed Cullen Finnerty? Maybe. I don't know. But sorry, I'm rambling a little bit because I've been researching this for days now, just trying to make it make sense. And I've actually written this story twice because I've been trying to figure out how to tell it. And so I'm just going to give it to you this way. And if you guys want to know more, please do some research, because I think that Cullen Finnerty and the other missing people in Michigan, the people who have gone missing and have turned up dead or whatever in Michigan, they deserve justice, because I think there's something going on in Michigan. And we're going to get into it a little bit, but please do your research on this case if you need more information or want more information. There's a plethora of details that are not in my write-up of this case that you can find for yourself and expand your opinions and sort of formulate your own ideas on what happened. But this is sort of me just telling the story, and we will discuss a little bit afterwards kind of like what we think happened. But let's get into this. Cullen Finnerty was a three-time champion in the NCAA Division II, a mountain of a man, a quarterback, a successful salesman, a healthy and competent athlete. He's widely regarded as one of the most successful college players to ever play football. This guy played four seasons in the NCAA and won the championship three of them. He's got 54 wins, which essentially means that I think I read somewhere, I'm not a huge college ball guy, but he did get drafted to the NFL, where he didn't really play, but he did play in Europe as well. But I saw somewhere that his losses can be counted on one hand the entire time that he was in the NCAA. I'm not exactly sure if that's true, but he was a wildly successful football player, a huge guy, 6 foot like two or something like that, and 250 pounds. The guy was a beast. 3 of his 4 seasons, he brought his team to championship wins. He was an outdoorsman, a hunter, and a fisherman. He enjoyed being on the water and knew how to handle himself. Another thing about Cullen was one of the things that made him unique in his time playing football is he was not afraid of getting hit. Like a lot of quarterbacks, they don't want to get hit because they don't want to get hurt. And, you know, the quarterback is kind of the spine of the team. If you lose your quarterback, then you're using your backup, who just usually isn't as good as your main guy. And so that one of the things that one of the ways Cullen played was extremely aggressively, and he would not in a bad way, but he was not afraid of getting hit, and he would oftentimes ram into people if he was running the ball instead of sliding or going out of bounds. So this guy was definitely able to take a hit. Him and his family 1 year took a vacation in May, a beautiful Michigan summer weekend, and it was May 26th, 2013 that they took this trip. They went out to Baldwin, Michigan, where Cullen's wife, her parents had a cabin, and so they would go out there and they would hang out with her parents and sort of spend the weekend there. Cullen was excited to do some fishing. He had just purchased a brand new pontoon fishing boat that he was excited to use. But Cullen had no idea that what he was about to experience would be the most horrifying moments of his life, and also, unfortunately, his last. In Michigan, for those who don't know, the forests are very dark. Michigan is a strange place. And even David Pilates has commented on how bizarre, mysterious, and dangerous the Michigan wilderness is. Some of the most talented and proficient outdoorsmen in the world live in the Great Lakes region. This is the type of landscape to forge such men. Michigan is also the home to some of the strangest disappearances in North America. Despite all of this, the Finnerty family couldn't have prepared for what was to come. And as somebody who has lived in that area of the country for most of my life, the woods out there, like, depending on where you are in the USA or the world, like, the forests are always kind of unique, right? But in this part of the USA, the forests are very, very dark. You have to understand that in the Great Lakes region, the winters are very cold, like frigid. You'll die out there cold. And winter is usually 5 to 6 months long, at least where I'm from in the area. And this is sort of upper Michigan. So it's going to be cold there for a long time, too. The winters are going to be long and brutal. And the forests, therefore, are capable of surviving long, brutal winters. So you have a lot of evergreens, you have a lot of pine trees, a lot of dark woods out there. These aren't really the easy to traverse type of forests. While preparing to leave their weekend getaway and head back home, so they had a good weekend and they're getting ready to head back, Cullen told his wife that he was going to take his new fishing boat out onto the water one last time. He said he'd probably only be out for about 30 minutes and that she should meet up with him at another dock further down the way and they would leave from there. So all of this was taking place in Baldwin, Michigan, which, like I said, is sort of upper middle area of Michigan. And this body of water that he was fishing on, that this cabin was on, was the Baldwin River. So essentially, he's going to take his boat from the cabin or the dock near the cabin, and he's going to go up the river and he's going to cast his line a few more times. He's going to try to get a few bites, and he's going to meet up with his wife at another dock up the way, where they're going to load up the boat and then head out. And I'll put a picture of what the boat looks like on the YouTube so you guys can see that. So immediately, like when I was first researching this case, this was like initially the first red flag. The fact that, you know, like nobody really goes fishing for 30 minutes. So immediately when I was reading about this case, I was like, this guy's up to something. There's something wrong. But the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. The guy was getting ready to go back to work. He had just bought a new boat. He was really enjoying it. It was this cool little fishing boat, like not like a huge boat like you guys are thinking about when I say pontoon, but like the kind where one person sits in it and there's pontoons on either side and you can like fish and stuff. Like he was just having a good weekend and he wasn't ready to put the boat up yet, and he wanted to go fishing a little bit longer. And so probably instead of trying to convince his wife to like stick around and stuff, he was like, you continue packing up the kids, get some time with your mom and dad before we head out. I'm just going to like say my goodbyes here and I'll meet you up there, and then we'll get out of here. And he just, you know, it's really, but this initially was the first red flag for me. Who goes fishing for 30 minutes? It takes me like 5 to 10 minutes just to bait a hook. So like, I'm pretty sure that, that's not the case though. I don't think he just wanted to go fishing for 30 more minutes. I think he wanted to get a little bit more time on the water, period. Wanted to enjoy his boat a little bit more, and in the process, fish. And I think a lot of times when these stories are retold, like what happened is retold by family members or witnesses or whatever, they don't exactly dig into what the victim meant when they said some of their final words. They don't exactly dig into the deep meaning. They take it at surface value because adrenaline is pumping and they're not exactly trying to psychoanalyze what's being said. There's a very reactive sort of attitude that takes over you when you start to experience things that are dangerous to you or those that you love and that are potentially life-altering. You go into this sort of let's get out of it mode, and I don't think people really remember maybe what was meant as much as what was said. So anyway, that's sort of my little dive on why Cullen Finnerty went out fishing for 30 minutes. A lot of people get hung up on that, and I don't think it's as weird as some people say. But anyway, off he went. As we said, he was on the Baldwin River, and it didn't take too long before his wife received a call from him. He was frantically speaking about two individuals who were on the banks of the river stalking him, following his boat, and he described them as two shadowy figures that he couldn't exactly see. He said it was hard for him to see them, but he could hear them following them. And some say that they sounded like they were talking as they walked along the banks with his pontoon. As he was going down the river, they were sort of stalking along the banks, watching him. And according to him, he could like hear them talking. And this is sort of something that comes up in missing person cases in Michigan. This episode was going to cover two different cases, but the more where two missing people were sort of pursued, stalked, or approached by a couple shadow people that they couldn't really describe, which made these two cases unique and special and maybe connected. But after doing as much research as I did, I am going to do them two separate episodes. So the other case was the case of Adrian Quintal, which I will be making a totally separate episode for, because I believe that each of these cases deserves their own episode instead of trying to mishmash them into one episode. but this is something that I think deserves attention when we're talking about missing cases in Michigan. Why so often do these people seem to experience stalkers, like shadow figures stalking them in the woods prior to their disappearance? What is that? Like, when the case is all over and the victim is found or not found and the cause of death is, put to the public and the investigation's over, why does nobody ever go in and question who these figures are that these victims report seeing prior to their death or upon being found alive and they report that they've seen things in the woods stalking them? People always say, like, investigators always say, well, yeah, you were just, hallucinating. You probably ate a berry or something, or whatever the case is. You weren't in your right mind. That's why you saw something. Imagine, like, somebody breaks into your house and you get a call off, or you're able to fight them off, or they run off, whatever the case is. But then when investigators come and you tell them that there was somebody in black who approached my house and broke in, and they were just like, yeah, well, he's not here. So you must have been imagining it. You must have done all this yourself. Like, that, why? Like, that doesn't even make sense how you would just give up on that lead. And yet, like so many other missing persons cases, so many 411 cases, and so many Michigan cases specifically, that's completely glossed over. It was never reported. And this guy has had documentaries made about him by Fox. This guy has had, if you go on YouTube, you can find a whole host of videos because he was a loved man. And yet nobody reports that he was being stalked. Not in the way that they should, not seriously. So here comes the second red flag for me. Cullen is in the middle of this body of water on a boat, right? In the same phone call that he tells his wife, there's two people stalking me on the banks, and he's freaking out. The stalkers are on the banks, on land, without a boat. And yet Cullen tells his wife on the phone during this phone call, I'm going to beach the boat on the banks, and I'm going to take off all my clothes. And then he hangs up. I don't know about you, but if I was being stalked and I was on a boat and my stalkers were on land, I see a lot of ways that I can get away from these people. For instance, I can continue on the way that I'm going, whether it's up or down river. I can just keep going and stay in the middle of the river. I can stop completely and stay in the middle of the river on my boat. You know, for all intents and purposes, Cullen was on a castle with a moat, being on this pontoon on the river with his stalkers on the banks. He's not in any danger. Unless they have some way to shoot him, he's not really in any danger there. He has the upper hand. As a matter of fact, he sees them, or at least knows kind of where they are, so he's able to keep his distance from them. He can also go to the other side of the river and beach the boat there, or try to seek help on the other side of the river. Can also go back to where he came from. And yet, for some reason, Cullen told his wife that he was going to beach the pontoon and take off all of his clothes. And that, my friends, is the third red flag. A lot of these missing 411 cases have these mysterious instances where people decide to take off their clothes. We have come to use this excuse for this phenomenon that basically says that people are impacted by some kind of mental state of mind or something that causes us to undress. It's like, I can't remember the exact term, it's like chronic undressing or something. I don't really get it personally, but it's this thing that we as humans apparently do when we're super cold sometimes. We begin to sweat and overheat, and then before you know it, we're taking off all of our layers and we're not thinking right. We begin to freeze to death without even knowing it, and then search and rescue people find us next to a pile of our own clothes, naked. It was in the 50s when Cullen went missing, so he wasn't experiencing extreme cold. This was summer. But that's the explanation for a lot of this kind of stuff. What is it about taking off your clothes and these missing 411 cases? Why did he even feel like that was a good idea? What was he going through that made him feel like that was a good idea? But again, it's not just Cullen. So many of these missing cases do this. They feel like it's a good idea to take off their clothes, usually shoes, jackets, shirts, and pretty much anything else. A lot of the time, shoes. What is this phenomenon? I think this needs to be looked into on a much bigger scale. As you can imagine, though, things start to get pretty crazy at this point. The wife is freaking out. Cullen is apparently freaking out and being stalked by two individuals in the woods. And for some reason, he's about to strip down naked and beach his boat. His safety. In all of the chaos, Cullen's brother either calls him or receives a call from him, and the only real takeaway from that phone call is that Cullen told his brother, "It's getting pretty rough out here, man." And his brother would later say that that was the only or one of the only times that he has ever heard his courageous mountain of a man brother sound horrified. He said he sounded horrified, and that this was something completely out of character for Cullen. So the cops are called. We're getting the boys out. A search is underway. Lots of people from Cullen's school come to help. It's a total search and rescue. It's a manhunt. They are determined to find him, and at this point, they have no reason to believe that they're not going to find him alive. I don't think anybody is assuming at this point that he will be found dead, because not only is he this huge guy, but he also had a boat that he could use to escape from his stalkers. Not to mention, and I feel like I should have said this at the beginning, but I didn't, Cullen is only 30 years old at this point. Like, he's not some old man. So, relatively early on in the search, Cullen's pontoon boat was found beached. This is like day one. Like, the search is going. This was sort of in the evening, so it's like night one or the morning of day two. Cullen's boat is actually found. It is beached on the banks of the river. However, his clothes were not found. So at a minimum, it appeared like he was still clothed, which was a good thing. And the police were actively tracking his cell phone activity, pinging it to try to get a location on Cullen. Unfortunately, the cell phone was pinging at multiple different towers in the area. Some say four different towers and some say five. There are multiple explanations for this, but some say that Cullen must have been running frantically from point A to point B very fast, zigzagging across the Michigan wilderness, just running, tearing through the woods. Others say that it's some kind of glitch, some kind of technological anomaly. In my opinion, it would make more sense that he was running from point to point. He was very athletic. He was scared to death. You know, he believed he was being chased. He was very, very scared. But this made it very difficult, as you can imagine, for the police to track him down. So the search goes on the best that they can. On the second day, however, Cullen's body was found. He was found face down on the ground with his cell phone in his hand, clutched to his chest like this under his body. He was still wearing his gaiters, which are basically like waterproof overalls that allow you to sort of wade into shallow water while you're fishing. And some sources say that the straps on the gaiters that would go over his shoulders were heavily tangled up in a way that didn't make sense, that he wouldn't have worn them like that, and implied that he was dragged by them or whipped around. Some say like literally like whipped around by his gaiters. Some among the first to see his body said that it looked like he was dragged there. The media, of course, never reported there was any type of foul play. Cullen had zero injuries on his body, just a bloody nose that they couldn't exactly find the reason for. His nose was not broken. As you can imagine, pretty much the whole family at this point is thinking this is absolutely foul play. They don't know how, because there are no injuries, but this doesn't seem normal, and they don't understand why or how Cullen could have essentially killed himself in this way. Many people say that the evidence points to him essentially being afraid to death, and in an insane attempt to save his own life by relentlessly fleeing from these stalkers, these shadow things in the woods, he ended up exhausting himself to death, horrified and alone and absolutely unexpectedly in the Michigan woods. The media, however, hastily blamed CTE and head trauma for because of his time in the NCAA. Even others brought forth their opinion that it was probably drugs. However, the autopsy report was relatively inconclusive. These are essentially what you could call guesses. Like, the guy who did the autopsy just said it may have been this, it may have been that, it may have been something else. Not really sure. The family reported that he never showed any signs of suffering from anything mental in the past, nor had concussions ever bothered him before, despite the fact that he did have at least one known concussion while playing football. Because of the ruling, though, Cullen's wife did end up suing the NCAA for allegedly leading to his death. However, she lost in court and didn't receive a dime, so that's kind of interesting. They want to say that his time in the NCAA killed him, but nobody's going to take responsibility for it, and they're not going to win a lawsuit. And I'm not saying that Cullen's wife should win a lawsuit. It was Cullen who decided to play a contact sport. I just think it's interesting that this was sort of a high-profile case, but where the NCAA was kind of blamed for it, but they didn't have to be held accountable. It's kind of interesting. It's almost like you can't have it both ways. There was a bizarre instance where a remote viewer took a look at this case too, and it's sort of a strange report. And for those of you who don't know what remote viewing is basically it's basically like. Seeing, like, somebody, a remote viewer, can see things where they aren't. And it sounds like magic, but the CIA had a whole program with it and everything, and it's basically this program, and I'm not going to get huge into it right now, where a seer, a sort of supernatural spy, is able to be given a very, very vague sort of question and answer it in a way that only makes sense to the person asking the question. So a remote viewer took a look at this and said that Cullen appeared to have been kidnapped, drugged, and murdered. And again, this remote viewer report is pretty wild, and some people subscribe to the idea of remote viewing and others don't, so that's why it's not a bigger part of this episode. But the remote viewer experienced great turmoil while viewing this, and fear, and during the course of the viewing said that whatever it was felt very evil and sinister, and that maybe this was a revenge killing. It's said that Cullen was left in captivity for a time. Obviously, a short time, but he was essentially restrained. That's what the remote viewer sort of said. And perhaps he escaped and was found dead, or he was killed and dumped. It's not really known. If the route that was pinged via the cell phone towers was true, there was no way that Cullen would not have crossed roads or at a minimum made contact with some civilization in the area. I mean, this was an extended summer weekend. Other people were around, and there were roads he could have passed. Just judging on the path that it appeared that he ran through the woods, it seems that there were several instances where he was able to cross roads and that he could have followed them to safety or made contact with people at scattered locations of civilization while he was just tearing mindlessly through the forest. One witness did come forward and say that they heard screams down near the water where Cullen's boat was found, but they weren't able to say for sure whether it was Cullen or somebody else. All they know is that they heard what sounded like violent screaming, and they were able to identify the exact direction, which was the same direction that Cullen's boat was found. Like I already said, Fox and others came out with videos honoring Cullen, but calling his death an unfortunate byproduct of professional sports trauma. The investigation halted as soon as the body was found. I don't know what to make of any of this. Like, when I read this, even just talking about it now for this, you know, this time, like, saying it out loud, I'm just like, what happened to Cullen Finnerty? Like, why? This feels, it almost feels wrong not investigating it further. Especially the fact that the NCAA didn't take any responsibility. And again, I'm not exactly saying that they should. I'm not one of those people who believes, like, people who get injured doing a dangerous thing should be compensated for doing that dangerous thing. I'm not saying that. It's just weird that this was a high-profile missing 411 murder death case. Maybe it was murder, maybe it wasn't, but you guys know what I'm saying. And it was directly attributed to sports, and yet the sports organization isn't going to take any responsibility for it. It's just kind of weird. I don't know. Like, what do you guys think of this case? Have you guys heard of this case before? Did you hear anything new listening to this video? I'm interested in your guys' comments. I want to read your guys' comments and see what you guys think of this case. But listen, this is all the time we have for today. I had a great time talking about all this with y'all. Remember to stay safe out there, and don't drink the water. Question everything. See you later, guys.